Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. And I'm talking with my friend, Kara Meredith, author of The Color of Life, A Journey Toward Love and Race Justice. And she's sharing with us her experiences. And she's been so generous with this book, with really taking us into her life. So, Kara, before we kind of jump back in, how can we find the book so that my listeners can go out, they can kind of start right now going over to some spots where they can pick up the book?
Absolutely. Well, The Color of Life is sold or is available wherever books are sold. So you can certainly find it online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can also head to my website, karameredith.com, and there are links to several websites that have it. Otherwise, you can go to your local independent bookstore and see if it's in stock, or you can order it from them. And it's available on audiobooks as well, if you are an Audible or an audiobook listener.
Well, I love audible books because that's a great way to kind of connect when you're driving. I do a lot of kind of long distance driving, and I do have the book, the Audible books.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Oh, good.
But now I want to jump back in where we left off in the last conversation. If people are just joining us, we were talking about really how, you know, it can love really make a difference? Can love really bring us to having more understandings about race and injustice and becoming more tolerant? But I want to swing over to a statement in your book, Kara, that really got me thinking when I read it. So if you don't mind, I'll kind of read what you said there. And you said, you said that compassion is when we are all sitting on the bank and watch people drown, but we do help pull them out. But justice is when we see someone poke their head up and say, you know what? I'm going to go upstream and see who keeps throwing everyone into the lake. That really gave me a pause because I was thinking, you know, we all like to think that we are compassionate people and that through our compassion, that is making a difference. And I'm sure it does make a difference because everyone is not as compassionate as other people. But really, when you brought the justice part in there to kind of compare them, not saying that compassion is a wrong thing to do, but when you brought that in, it really caused me to think. So tell me a little bit more about your thinking about those two words and those two behaviors, because that's actually what they can become, taking the word compassion and the word justice from just being a word into actually an action. So tell me a little
Absolutely.
Bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think about this a lot, so welcome to my head. But I think it's a matter of reacting versus responding. And I say that because there is nothing wrong with compassion. Compassion, obviously, is what we have to have. Compassion, certainly in this case, means that we are reacting to the emergency. We are, and whatever that is coming down our way. But we also have to look at the root of the problem, and that's where justice comes in. That responding means that we are thinking about the entirety of what's going on. And so when it comes to problems of race or to racial injustice, in our country at least, a lot of that is systemic, meaning that it's all the way in the systems of our country, whether it's government, whether it's education, whether it's the school to prison pipeline. And when we're thinking about this, particularly for the African American community or for young Black men, like we talked about earlier, what does it mean to all the way look at the beginning and to look at those systems and to say there is something wrong with this, that the systems that are in place are not setting everyone up to succeed? Mm-hmm. And so what does it mean then when it comes to young Black and brown boys, or to anyone really, but just for, if equality is for everyone, which it is, what does it mean to then look at the root of the system and to begin to fix the problem at the root of it instead of merely reacting to the problem when those bodies are at the bottom of the river? Mm. So we have to look at the root of our systems that are already in place and begin to fix those, because that's where justice truly comes in. So I think about that for my, not only for my young sons, but my kids are only 6 and 4, so they're still babies. But for everyone, what does it mean to begin to look at the source so that we are actually putting action into our response?
And you have to think about it and be concerned about it as a society, because we don't live, you know, in isolated bubbles. We all live together here on Earth, as citizens, whether you are a citizen of the U.S. or a citizen of another country, we're all citizens of the earth. So we do have to be concerned about that. It reminds me, I did a lot of training in diversity and cultural awareness, and it reminds me of something that I used to tell people, that when you're kind of looking at situations, you can kind of say, you know, so what? And then, so what? You know, because a lot of times people say, well, so what, that's happening, you know. But then you also need to take it further and say, well, what now? Because we can't just stop in the so what. It's really comfortable there to kind of just talk about it, banter back and forth, or maybe say, oh, well, that's not my problem. But if we can get to the now what part of it and see what we can do as individuals to make a difference in the greater society that we all live in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Carol, I want to ask you this, because I know you had to have run into this, but what about naysayers? Do you have people who advise you not to kind of lay your life out, you know, for the public to kind of see and explore and have comments and judgments even about? So did you have naysayers or no? Were people just kind of like, yay, let's go, Carol, let's do this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There have been naysayers at every step along the way, and there are still naysayers, and there will always be naysayers. You know, it was one of those, especially for my husband. I mean, he was certainly on board. He wrote the afterword for the book. His father wrote the foreword for the book. But because he experienced firsthand his father's fame, so for your listeners, my father-in-law is a man named James Meredith. So he's the first Black man to integrate into the University of Mississippi. He then led the Meredith March Against Fear in 66, which many historians call the last greatest protest march of the civil rights movement. But for him, for my husband, because he firsthand experienced both the positive and negative effects of not only his father's fame, but of his father's choice to engage so deeply in issues of race, that was something that my husband and I, had to talk about from the very beginning. Mm. And to realize that there would be consequences with this. So in that way, it's, you know, my heart is that this book, again, encourages conversation. That's all I want from it. I'm not going to make the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, it would be great if I did, but I'm not going to. But if this book can encourage conversation around the dinner table, which is what just happened with you this last weekend when it came to that quote, then I've done my job. But in that way, there are a lot of people who are not happy with what I've written. I haven't seen it so much at this level. I think the book is still pretty early on, and so it hasn't gotten into the hands of as many naysayers. But for a lot of folks who identify as white or of European American descent, it's really hard for them to read or hear me talk about issues of privilege or white privilege. So there are a lot of naysayers around that. Certainly for a lot of my friends of color, the book isn't always the easiest for them to read, because there are a lot of mistakes. I'm very open in this about my journey, like you said. And even though I feel like I've had some people say, wow, you really put it all out there. And I just go, well, I don't know. I think I purposely pick stories that would prove a point, and then I just went deep into those stories. So in a sense, I feel like I picked, you know, 0.05% of the actual
experiences,
of the actual scope of my life, and picked them purposefully. But all that to say, there are naysayers. And because of that, I put really big boundaries around my life, especially when it comes to the social media sphere. I don't engage with the naysayers when people make stupid comments because they think they're allowed. Mm-hmm. I check Facebook and Twitter and Instagram once a day, because I don't need to be overwhelmed or underwhelmed by some of the hateful rhetoric that's there.
Well, speaking of that, how can we connect with you on your website and Facebook and Instagram? How can people connect? Books like this do help people.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so you can connect with me. First place is on my website, again, karameredith.com. Otherwise, I'm on both Facebook and Instagram at Kara Meredith Writes, as in I write things. and then I'm on Twitter at karamax54.
Very good, very good. Now, I have been talking with my good friend, Kara Meredith, the author of the book, The Color of Life. Now, Carrie, this is brought us down to the end of the segment, but what I'm going to talk about next is that I'm going to talk about some places, museums, and historic sites where people can go and learn more about injustice, learn more about race, learn more about, you know, just tolerance and all of those things. So thank you for getting this conversation started and offering ways then for us to think deeper and maybe also do some traveling to really sort some of these things out as well. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you, Anita.
Now, you guys, this is Travel Bags with Anita Friends. And when we come back, just as I mentioned, I have some great destinations for you to check out here on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Back in a moment.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in.